You are listening to a talk given at the Brisbane City Bible Forum. We hope you enjoy the talk.
We were just discussing earlier about the title is ripped off from Dan Brown's book, Angels and Demons, and which would have provided a very good introduction. But the problem is I read that book a few years ago and I can remember precisely nothing from the book. Absolutely nothing. So I'm sorry about that. Angels and Demons, is there a spiritual dimension? Well, for those of you who know me, well, hopefully we'll have time for questions at the end, but it is a slightly long talk, so I'd like to give this topic a little bit of depth. Those who know me well know that I enjoy the comics of Calvin and Hobbes by the cartoonist Bill Watterson, who I think is just brilliant. And one of those scenes, Calvin, who's the boy, he's a six-year-old boy, asks Hobbes, his imaginary tiger friend, who's a toy tiger, but when there's no adults around, Hobbes, you know, talks and thinks. Calvin says, "Do you think that there is a supreme evil being dedicated to the destruction and corruption of man?" And Hobbes turns to him and says, "I don't really think man needs any help at all." See, this is the question, isn't it? Is there an evil being? Is there an evil being called Satan? Because that's what we're looking at this one, Satan and the existence of evil. And what power might he have? And what influence might he have? And if he exists, does that let humanity off the hook, just as Hobbes says? Does he have any power and influence, or is the problem with humanity? What does that look like? And what's the relationship if there is an evil being? So firstly, I want to look at kind of just Satan. Who is he? Really, I'm going to locate my information from the Bible. You could look in all sorts of places, and we'll touch on some of that later. But just to explore who he is, here are some of his names across the Bible. He's the accuser. So he accuses people of wrongdoing. He's the slanderer. He's the one who opposes God. He's called the tester. He's called the deceiver. He's called the murderer, the one who murdered from the beginning. So Jesus speaks about Satan as the one who, from the very beginning, brought murder into the world. He's known as the evil one. He's the kind of the person of evil. And he's also known as the adversary, which picks up on really his role. He's against people. That's what the language there is, primarily about against people, either in corruption or destruction. Now, the interesting thing about looking at him in the Bible is it's almost it's actually out of the corner of your eye, if that makes sense. You know, when you look at things, and there's things that you can kind of almost only see when you look out of the corner of your eye. So, you know, night vision, that apparently, from the SAS novels I've read, that actually the night vision that you have is actually slightly better out of the side of your eye. So if you want to see something in the dark, it's actually not looking at it directly. It's a little bit how Satan and evil beings turn up in the Bible. There's actually very few references to them. They rarely are the focus of the attention. But they're there on the periphery, they're there on the edges, and they're influential and they're powerful. But they're not something that the Bible's preoccupied with. And I'll come back to why right at the end. So that's kind of interesting. They're incidental, but powerful. Now, I want to say, actually, my nervousness in talking about this topic. I'm very happy to talk about Jesus because I can kind of ground him in history. I've thought about God as a creator, and I think thinking about the nature of human life, philosophy, history, the existence of the story of the Bible, and the existence of the church, and I feel like I've got lots of kind of rational, evidential things when I talk about God or Jesus. But when it comes to Satan, it feels a bit weird to talk about him. I'm not someone who, you know, wants to locate, oh, something bad happened, the devil did it, you know. It feels a bit anti-21st century Western rationalism. But here's the thing. Jesus spoke about it. Very simply, very directly, and very clearly. And so I guess my evidence for this kind of person is grounded really in my confidence about the kind of things that Jesus said and thought and taught, and him as a person of immense integrity and trustworthy. All right. Now, I just want to explore our shyness in actually talking about Satan and the existence of evil. How do we handle that in our society? I've been reflecting on this a lot. I think primarily what we do is we caricature evil. Is anyone old enough and hip enough to remember Buffy the Vampire Slayer? So evil was, yeah. So evil was what? It was kind of caricatured, wasn't it? It was kind of obvious. And the heroine, well, you know, goodness was kind of caricatured as well, because she was Buffy the Vampire, like this teenage chick, this hot teenage chick, if I can say that. Or perhaps you were, mate, perhaps, you know, you were vacuous enough to have watched Charm. Did I say that? No, I didn't say that. No, no. You didn't watch that. Or, you know, if you're, you know, a little younger, it's Stephanie Meyer. It's the love story between a lonely teenage girl and a blood-sucking beast called a vampire. And so what's going on there? Now, I like horror much less than the next person. I really don't like horror at all. It gives me the creeps, which I guess is the point of horror. But anyway, what happens there is evil is caricatured. Think about what's going on. Evil is clearly what? Monstrous. Evil is clearly identified. And evil is clearly isolated. It's not everywhere. It's in a spooky place or in a spooky evil being. It's and actually it enables us to stand aloof from evil and to kind of distance ourselves from it. That's I'm not objecting to all those films and movies in many ways, but can you see how we've just caricatured the idea of evil, I think, to help us deal with it, to help us push it aside in one way or another in its existence in the world. And that's what we do, isn't it? We deny the existence of evil. A guy called Anton LaVey started the Church of Satan a couple of decades ago, and he wrote the Satanic Bible. Now, he's interesting. He believes in atheistic Satanism. So he doesn't actually think Satan exists. He's just a kind of personification. He's a metaphor. So that's very interesting. And yet, the idea of the spiritual realm and evil still exists, doesn't it? I was looking at that article on Anton LaVey from a respectable newspaper. Oh, no, this statistics from a respectable newspaper called The Age, and up popped an ad for horoscopes on The Age newspaper. Now, you say, no, no one really believes the horoscopes. That's right, which is exactly why the newspaper still put them in. Because people still look at them, and they still think this realm of spirituality exists, and it influences me. Crazy to think why stars and planets somewhere else would influence you. There's kind of really interesting going on there, but it shows that we still believe. Now, in this Age newspaper article, there was a survey from a few years ago that said belief in the devil is at about 37% of the 1,000 people surveyed. So about 1 in 3 people still believe in the devil. And actually, that's gone down. It was kind of 45% in 1983. But what's interesting, that even amongst people who are atheists or agnostics, clearly identify themselves, 1 in 10 people who don't believe in God or clearly doubt God, so, you know, you can't know, which is, you know, clear agnosticism, 1 in 10 believe in witches, the devil, heaven or hell. Yeah. So we've got this persistent belief of evil and even evil beings. Why does this idea persist in us? Because I think, how else do we explain some of the things that go on in the world? If the world is just a materialistic accident, then you can't actually say that something is evil. Whatever is just is. Whatever things happen are just part of the natural order of things. If the world is purely material, and it's just an accident in space and time, then anything that happens just happens as a pure cause and effect. Does that make sense? It's quite philosophical, but that's the reality. And you actually cannot say something is evil. It's not evil. You can't say anything's good either. It just is. But when terrorists fly planes into buildings, when a man cuts up his transgender lover and barbecues them down on the Gold Coast, We reach for these categories, don't we? How else do you explain what is going on here? You have to reach for the category of evil, and you have to reach for the category that somehow evil does influence us, don't you? That it does have a profound effect on us. Now, here's the interesting thing about the Bible. See, the Bible doesn't deny the existence of evil. It doesn't caricature it, but it says something quite frightening. It says that Satan, in particular, is a being of profound influence. Subtle, but profound influence. And I want to explore that with you. This is halfway through, we're going to look at a Bible passage, it's halfway through the Gospel of Mark. Most of the Gospels about Jesus have a turning point in them. And the turning point is when the people who are following Jesus start to actually grasp who Jesus is. It's kind of Jesus trying to reveal himself to the people who want to follow him, and they don't even get him. When they get him, then all of the Gospels have a turning point where the narrative changes. It's the center point of all Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, different ways, but and we're at that center point. And Jesus, with his disciples, one of them, Peter, and he'd ask them, who do you say I am? And they say, well, some people around think you're Elijah, some think you're a prophet. Jesus says, well, who do you, my closest, my inner ring, who do you think I am? And here's the passage. And he asked them, who do you say that I am? And Peter answered him, you are the Christ. And Jesus strictly charged them to tell no one about him and began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed and after 3 days rise again. And he said this plainly, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and seeing his disciples, Jesus rebuked Peter and said, get behind me, Satan, for you do not have, you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man. Now that's very interesting. So you notice, if I got this right, do you notice the parallel there? Can you see the parallel in the text? Peter's spoken, saying, Jesus, you shouldn't go to the cross. Jesus called him Satan. That would have been hard to take, I imagine. But the shocking here is the parallel. He says, get behind me, Satan, identifying Peter as you know, Satan's at work in him, and saying, the things you speak of are the things that men speak of. He's directly paralleling the work of Satan and the words and thinking of men, humanity, ordinary human thought. The power of Satan is wielded in normal human thought. That's a bit scary, isn't it? It's easy to dismiss the caricature, isn't it? It's easy to dismiss the caricature of evil. But this picture is much harder to dismiss. Let me just talk about the normalness of evil, really. You remember a few years ago, in 2013, a man was in Cincinnati, Ohio. His name was Ariel. He had kidnapped three young women between 2002 and 2004, and they were only rescued in 2013. And here's the thing, what were their names? Their names were Michelle, Gina, and someone else. Ariel, he acted just like a normal, ordinary citizen. In fact, when Gina went missing, he went and joined part of the vigils, the all-night vigils to pray for her, and joined the search parties to look for her. London, November 2013, the detectives rescued three women who'd been held captive as domestic slaves for 30 years in a household in London. And let me quote the police detective. He said, it was an ordinary house in an ordinary street. See, the profound power of evil is that it's normal, ordinary. Let me talk about it in our own society. Have you noticed the cruelty of social media? It's just people talking to people, isn't it? It's ordinary human conversation. And what has it led to? Young men and women, teenagers, so despairing of their view of themselves and how their peers view them, that they take their own life. What about child pornography? It's just been exposed in the military, hasn't it? People set aside to protect and defend people. And here's the thing, it's at every level. People are going, I sat next to this ordinary other soldier, this ordinary person who was good at their job and did their everyday ordinary business and we had ordinary conversations. And yet they were part of an online child pornography ring, distributing the material, using the power of the military's internet. Or overseas surrogacy, which is in the news at the moment. Come in. You know, overseas surrogacy. I understand the grief of not being able to have a child, but think about it. What is overseas surrogacy? It's rich Westerners using the poverty in other nations and women's wombs as factories. It's a slavery of the 21st century. But it's just an ordinary decision. We can't have children. IVF didn't work. Oh well, we'll just spend some money in. And what about sadness and grief of abortion? Look, I know there are exceptional circumstances when a woman has a child that she should not have and should not be there. But put those aside. Most cases, it seems to me, are when a couple have sex and they have a child, the baby in the womb, and the man doesn't want to have the child. And so he pressures the woman. That seems to be most of the cases. And the ordinary abortions, the ordinary everyday murder of thousands and thousands of children is part of our Western society and culture. It's just deeply ingrained in our society, in our culture. It's great evil. But it's ordinary. It's normal. And it's called pro-choice. And the Bible is saying here, in this kind of parallel between get behind me, Satan, you don't have in mind the things of God, but the things of men. He's saying that's how Satan is most powerfully at work, in ordinary human thought. And it's saying no one is free of the influence. No one is free of that influence. No one in society or culture. Now, this is shocking, but it's kind of the thing we need to hear. C.S. Lewis said this. There are two equal and opposite errors into which our race can fall about the devils. One is to disbelieve their existence. The other is to believe and to feel an excessive and unhealthy interest in them. Now, but I think that's the point. It's a big error to disbelieve if they exist, isn't it? If they do exist, you can't resist them. You can't recognize what's going on. You can't see their sphere of influence. Here's another theologian. Someone tell me where this comes from. Which theologian said this? The greatest trick that the devil ever pulled is convincing the world that he didn't exist. Anyone know? No. Verbal. From the Usual Suspects. So I was kidding about it. I put you off the track by talking about him as a great theologian. But you know, that's him, isn't it? He was the man behind the whole plot of what happened in Usual. And you only find out that he persuaded them that he didn't exist, and it was Kaiser Suse, if I've pronounced that correctly. But here's the thing, right? This idea that Satan might influence now, it's disturbing. But if it's true, isn't it exactly what we need to hear? Because if you recognize that he might be at work, you can resist him. But if you don't think that there's any evil influence or any evil forces out there, aren't you all the more susceptible to them? Aren't you maybe a little more ready to maybe self-justify yourself about some of your actions? Because, now, of course, no one influences you, and of course you always choose the right and the pure and the good, right? And of course, when something comes along and it, you know, you're not sure whether you should do it or not, and you're wrestling with it, if you think that maybe there is an evil being who's trying to corrupt you, it might help you just think a little harder and pause a little more deeply before you choose this thing that you're just not quite so sure about. And actually, that's the big point of the Bible. And it's picking up on C.S. Lewis's thing. An awareness of evil, the existence of evil, and a spiritual realm that's at work to bring evil is exactly what enables you to resist it. It says, resist the devil and he will flee from you. Because you've eyeballed him. He's the deceiver. When you know he's at work, you get to eyeball him, and he does what? He runs away. Now here's the thing. See, the power of Satan is at work. And it's directed. His power, where does he wield most of his power? What does the Bible say? Well, it's directed towards actually rejecting Jesus. See, this passage gives us insight into that again. Here's the context. Jesus says, who do you say that I am? And Peter answered, you are the Christ. I think of this as really the undercover boss moment, really, of world history. Think about this. Just imagine that you were let's say, a floor sweeper in the widget factory of General Electric. General Electric is currently the seventh largest company in the world. And there you are, you're sweeping the floor, and then you discover that the guy who's been working with you all day, also, you know, sweeping the floor with you with his widget factory for General Electric, he suddenly becomes unveiled as the CEO of General Electric. See, Peter's been hanging around with Jesus and he kind of knew he was someone special. But when Peter says you are the Christ, and then Jesus says don't tell anyone because it's true, Peter suddenly discovers that he's not just working alongside and living alongside and sharing the air alongside of the CEO of General Electric. He's been hanging out with the CEO of General Everything. The God of the universe, the creator. It's like the boss of everything seen and unseen is right there. Now think about this. Let's just say you had discovered that this guy working next to you was the boss, the CEO of General Electric. And you just realized that. And he says to you just, you know, because you've been hanging out over coffee, and he says, well, look, actually, I'm thinking about buying Samsung. What would you say? What would you say to him? You'd say probably precisely nothing, wouldn't you? Because what do you know? I mean, you operate a completely different level to the kind of power, money, influence. What do you know about whether he should do this or not? You know, at most, you might say, trying to sound like you know things, sure, good call. You rush off and buy some Samsung shares, right? Look at Peter. He said this plainly. Jesus says, I'm the Christ. He said, I'm going to suffer. I'm going to Jerusalem. I'm going to die. The leaders of your nation are going to kill me. And he says this plainly. And Peter takes him aside and rebukes Jesus. Peter takes aside the CEO of the world. He says, look, Jesus, I don't think that's such a good idea. That's not what's going to happen.
Not much of a business plan, is it?
No. Well, you're right. As a business plan, it sucks. But as a salvation plan, very good, right?
Yeah.
See, and Jesus' point here is then Jesus says to him, get behind me, Satan. See, that was always the plan of Satan. That's what he wields all of his power towards, is having Jesus not die on the cross, not offer salvation. That was his plan then, and it's still the plan of Jesus. He directs most of his power towards what? Helping us think that Jesus was just a martyr who accidentally got himself martyred. That his death was just an example to show us how much you could do if you wanted to please God. Or that historically he's a myth. All those things that are in the popular media are Satan's most powerful plan of attack. See, what's Satan's number one aim? To take away your eternity. That's his greatest and most powerful act of deception. See, that's where it's interesting, isn't it? Because the horror movies say it's all about physical death. And they're monstrous. And it's awful. And it's isolated. But Satan's work is to make death just ordinary, not calamitous, and for us to be more worried about our physical health than our spiritual existence. And then he truly has been a deceiver, doesn't he? He's truly been a deceiver. He's successfully deceived very powerfully. Because if there is a spiritual dimension, if there is a world to come, and he's had you so preoccupied on going to the gym, had me so preoccupied on going to the gym and doing my physio. Have you ever noticed how easy it is to read the newspaper and how hard it is to pick up the Bible and to take time to thoughtfully read it? How easy it is to watch another ad as you try to watch free-to-air TV, and how hard it is to deeply read a Christian book? Have you ever noticed? Satan's at work. And his sharpest point of attack is not really the horror stories of our society and community. But it's actually trying to help you to be distracted from the things that matter most, because then he has us for eternity. And who's Satan's most cunning ally? Well, the shocking thing is, it's us. Listen to this part of John's Gospel. It comes just after the famous bit that we love, John 3:16, for God so loved the world. If we just read a little further, we might not like John chapter 3 quite so much. It says this is the verdict. It pictures the world as a courtroom. The world is a courtroom where God stands in judgment and says this is the verdict. Light has come into the world and light is the man of Jesus. But what? Men and women. Men it uses as a cipher for humanity. Loved darkness instead of light. Why? Because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does evil hates the light, will not come into the light for the fear that his deeds will be exposed. So humanity is frightened, love their deeds, and are frightened to come to Jesus because they have to be exposed for what they are. See, this is saying, you know what? In this realm, spiritual realm of good and evil, and by good I mean pure good, and by evil I mean real darkness, it's saying there's a fifth column. There's an insurgency. There's someone behind the wall at work in our lives, and it's our very own hearts. So the Bible doesn't let us off the hook. It says the reason that Satan is so influential and so powerful in humanity is because we ourselves have capitulated. We've given in. So the Bible doesn't say, ah, you can blame Satan. The devil made me do it. It says he's powerful, but why is he so powerful? Because he's at work in you and you've capitulated to him and you're under his rule. Unless, of course, you're under Jesus' rule. Let me conclude. What does Paul say we should say? It's from Ephesians chapter 6. I didn't put it up. Let me read it out to you. Ephesians chapter 6. Paul comes to the letter, end of his letter, to the people living in Ephesus, which is, you can find out a bit more about that city from Acts 19. And it was a place where sorcery and witchcraft and the worship of idols was manifest. It was the spiritual center, in many ways, of the Roman Empire. And he ends his letter to the Ephesian Christians like this. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. So that's interesting. That's why Christians don't take up arms against political rulers. That's not where the game's at. That's why they don't even take up arms on, you know, people who are against them in society or culture or the workplace. Because that's not where it's at. But actually, there's a spiritual realm. That's why Christians get down on their knees and pray. That's the power to fight against the spiritual realm. The Bible here is really shocking if we start to think about it. It gives us two options. We can refuse to recognize the existence of the spiritual realm. And the Bible says it rules over us. The very fact that we refuse to recognize its existence enables it to rule over us. But if we run to Jesus and the rescue found in him, then we can both recognize it and resist it. Those are our two options. Refuse, let it rule us. Recognize and run to Jesus. Then there's power through him to resist it.